Father, I thank you so much for today and for all these people who are called to lead, Lord, leading visions, leading missions, leading teams of people. And I thank you that there's grace for this work and that there's tools available. And I ask that you fill them with your Holy Spirit, that you bring hope on this message, that people rely on you for a sense of provision, and that they learn something new that they can go out and actually put into practice with the vision that you've given them to do. Amen. All right, so I'm going to quick read the paragraph. It says, there's too much vision, work, and ministry to be done without volunteers. How do you find the right people, invite them to participate, set them up for success, get the vision out of your heart and before a group of people so they can run with it. And this is a workshop for all of us who have a vision that's bigger than us on the importance and practicals of building thriving, healthy teams. Hey guys, come on in. We're so glad you're here. Okay, so a lot of what I started with in my journey, and we're going to have a Q&A at the end. So if you have questions that are related to something I said, or your context is, you know, a niche, I have people here who can probably speak into that niche. So you can save that question for the end if you don't know how it applies. But there's a few principles that I learned as I had the past about 19 years in work and ministry experience, and I'm going to share them with you. But one of the first is that I'm the oldest of seven. There's seven children in my family. So I was really used to mobilizing a crew of people and pointing the way. This is the way we were going to go. Hey, guys, this is the vision. This is what God has for us. Let's go this way. The second thing that was a tool in my tool belt is the first job I ever had was a waitress. And you're like, what's empowering about being a waitress? But the training they gave us was this, that every employee and myself as a waitress was empowered to see that customer walked out of the restaurant happy. I didn't have to go get a manager to like comp the ticket if the meal was slow or the food was bad. They trained me. They're like, hey, you could offer a free dessert. Hey, you could do this. Hey, you could do that. And so this tool of empowerment and actually having the authority to be able to empower a team of people to make a difference without having to bump it up the chain of command. It was such a key for success, because how many of you have ever worked on a team where you didn't know where your boundaries were? You didn't know what you were and you weren't allowed to do. You didn't know how to get the word out. You didn't know what was the avenues of communication. So as leaders, no matter what we're leading, what I always like to do is say, how are you empowering, if you're a lead pastor or a team lead, how are you empowering the people under you to know how to execute the vision so that they can be successful without having to ask permission for everything that they need to do? The second part of my formation experience was my first professional job after I graduated, was working for a large private Christian school in their development department that ran all of their fundraising by volunteer teams. There was probably 12 volunteer teams that were all led by volunteers. So the chairman of that team and that event was a volunteer. And we as staff supported those teams. So these teams were led very much like a corporate environment where would be led, where there was a team lead. And we were there to help catch balls, provide support, but also to keep the vision moving. But they had ownership of the success of their team. So just for an example, they would raise $120,000 at a golf tournament that went all day. And this was entirely volunteer-led. So there's amazing growth that taught me, that like volunteers are not just given the work that isn't important. They can be given and trusted with significant work. They can be trusted with the purpose and the vision and the mission and empowered to do their job. And then for many years, we lived in South Africa and we cut our teeth in cross-cultural ministry experience where there's many different cultures and you have to learn to intentionally communicate with someone who has a different value and understanding about leadership than you did. And I always said, after all of these things, is that if you want to go fast, you can go alone. But if you want to go far, you have to go with a team, right? There's some Dove-isms, and really Larry Crater is a great example because he builds teams for everything. If you don't know this about Larry, he builds teams for everything, so he should really be teaching this workshop. But the best leaders are those who are able to work themselves out of a job. So this is like a standard for us. Because a lot of the times as doers, we think it's our job to do all the things. Instead of our job to wait for the Lord to bring the right people and continually be recruiting and looking for people who will pick up a piece of the vision, own it, and take it further than you thought it could even go. What if building teams wasn't about the event or the purpose of the team, but what if it was about investing in people and cultivating relationships? The best team leaders are those who aren't just only focused on getting that volunteer slot filled, getting that task done. The best team leads are seeing it's my job to bring out the gift in you. It's my job to see where you fit best and not just continually be burning out volunteers on a volunteer burnout wheel, but helping people identify who they're called to be, what they're called to carry, and coach them to the next level. Because people come to your churches and they have relationship with you because they want to belong. And this is the biggest misconception. I feel like sometimes we get it wrong in the church. We assume that everybody who comes in has like some form of like church hurt or woundedness. And we're like, no, you just sit and receive. We're not going to ask you to do anything here. But a lot of times people come in the door and they're looking to say, well, I belong in a family. Will what I bring matter? Can I make a difference here? Will I find friends? So we have to like change our mentality with how we see teams. Teams of volunteers is an invitation into community. It's an invitation into relationship. It's an invitation to growth. And that's how I see every team that I have ever led. I want to bring out the best in those people. And I love that verse that says, he sets the solitary in families. The best leaders respond to coaching. They have the innate desire to walk with others. And most of the best leaders want someone to speak into their life. They're hungry to reach the mark. And those people can be empowered to lead teams that lead teams. So you're looking for like this type of humble leader to see the gifts in others and want them to succeed and go farther than they can. All right, so I'm going to talk about a few phases of development that I've seen. This might not apply to everybody. If not, just give us grace. There's a startup, kind of the beginning of a new team or the beginning of a church. Everything revolves around one central leader. At this stage, you're doing a lot yourself because you have to. You're like cleaning the toilets, mopping the floors, preaching the sermon, and cleaning up afterwards, okay? You're if it's an event, you're buying the groceries, you're organizing the people to come in, you're baking the casserole, and then you're making the agenda for the meeting. You're doing everything yourself. As your ministry grows and as your reach grows, you still might find yourself in the startup phase, able to check in with everyone who leads a team under you. It's manageable. But in that startup phase, you will get to a place where the workload, if God gives you grace to grow, you're actually not able to check up on all the team leads who come after you. And so you begin to hit this place of whitewater where you don't feel like you're doing the best coaching. You don't feel like you're as available as you should be. And there's things you see need done, but you don't know how you can add one more thing to your plate. And the solution for that is to invest in the people around you. And it seems antithetical because you say, how can I take time? Wouldn't it be better? Wouldn't it be faster if I just did it myself? But actually, the opposite is true. If you have the people around you that you've identified have gifts and grace to grow and lead, and you invest in them and you coach them, the work will go further, faster. Some things that are a danger zone when you're going from startup phase into the next growth phase are this. Are people on your teams waiting for a response from you? Are they waiting for permission or checking in before they can proceed? What that means is you have become the lid for your team. So there's a time to restructure. So that's kind of like your danger zone. that you might need to restructure a little differently. That's okay in the startup phase because you want to get the vision, but at some point, you're going to become a limiter and a frustration, and your kind of high-value volunteer leaders will be frustrated and not want to serve under you because they're always waiting. They don't know their parameters. They don't know if they have budgetary approval for the thing you've asked them to do because everything is still revolving around one person. If you find yourself running out of time in the week, that's kind of a red flag. Hey, God, how do you want us to restructure our teams? You're running out of time in the week to do everything that needs done. Sometimes this involves staff. Sometimes this involves bringing on an assistant. Sometimes this involves delegating and releasing another team. One of the things that I find as a lead pastor that would happen is we would have all this vision. We'd come in on a Sunday morning, and we would see all the things that were going wrong that weren't up to our expectation. You know, the sound wasn't set up right. The mics weren't right. There was nobody at the door. The greeter was late. All the things that you see that needs to happen. And inside, you're getting ready to minister the word of God, and you are so frustrated. And you're like, oh, my word, I see all this stuff that needs to happen. And that is a red flag that it's time to sit with Jesus and begin to say, why am I actually frustrated? And begin to write the vision you have for this area. Write the vision for what that greeter team would look like. What is your expectations on that people? What time would you like them to arrive? What personality traits do you want them to have? And you begin to write it down. And then you take it to a few people who you think might be able to do the job. And you say, what do you think about this? Is there anything that's missing? What would this look like if this was awesome here? And then I kind of linger in the intercession waiting phase. Because I don't like to, at this stage of my life, start anything. I mean, you can ask these ladies. I birth ideas in my sleep. Okay? I try to turn it off. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, it's dangerous because guess what happens when you're the one that has the idea? You have the commissioning, you know? It's hard when you have to manage these new ideas and you have to wait. Because an immature leader feels like every vision I have has to be fulfilled by me. A wise leader waits to see the team member that God will bring to meet that need. Sometimes that's in prayer. Sometimes that's in intercession. So I'll give you a practical example, and I'm going to give a non-church example. I could give a church example, but it's a little dangerous because you might know the people, and I might get in trouble. So I'll use just another example from my life. So when we were in Cape Town, and our kids needed some friends to homeschool. So Merle and I, we're going to start to pray. We're going to start to pray that God would bring good friends for our kids. And we would pray intentionally for 2 years. We said, Lord, our kids are homeschooled. There's no one homeschooled that we know around us. I want to pray that you would meet this need. So for 2 years, we would literally pray. 2 years is a long time to pray for kind of like, that's kind of like a low level. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't feel like you're praying for a huge breakthrough, but for your children in another nation. And in that, on community forums, I had invited people in, but nothing really clicked. But 2 years in, something amazing happened where a family moved in down the street off of Mercy Ships. A family moved from out of state, just a block away. And a missionary family moved in 2 houses down from us. And somehow, by the hand of God, we met. And that group formed a homeschool group that grew in the next few years to over 100 people that influenced our region. So I could have done something in my own strength. Or I could have waited and prayed that the right team comes around the vision. So you write the vision, you make it plain, and then you go into a place of intercession and say, God, I really need to see breakthrough in this certain area. I really care about this, Lord, but I am going to have the wisdom to not jump into this and take it on and do it in my own strength, because for me, it's really clear what I'm supposed to do and it's really clear what I'm not supposed to do. So I don't want to go into a place of striving, but I'm going to pray and wait on the Lord. I'll give you another example. In our church, Hannah would have been a part of this. We kept having these ideas around our welcome center. We called it a connection center. We thought, well, surely we can do this better. And, you know, as we started to pray about this, like, Lord, what would this look like? I was really involved with this big transition that was happening in my life and in my husband's life, wink, wink, behind the scenes. So I couldn't take on more. But as I was starting to talk about the need, and wouldn't it be great if it looked like this, that vision started to be shared by many people. And some of them really dug in and took initiative to birth a new thing, which became a welcome center in our church, part of our strategy for bringing people on. And God did an amazing thing. So my encouragement for you is to really know what God has given you to do and know what he has not given you to do. And you don't have to do everything you see. I'm going to say that again. You don't have to do everything you see. You have to prioritize your family rhythms and pray and ask the Lord to bring sometimes catalyst relationships that breaks things open. Yeah. Get the vision out on and see who is your friend. For podcasting with Lisa, we were talking. I said, oh, Lisa, I meet all these people. I hear all these people online. They've been in this region for like 7-10 years, and they have no relationships, and they're so lonely. What if we could do a podcast? Immediately, she said, Sheree, I'll do that with you. And then she has this amazing dad, and she calls him up, and she says, Dad, he happened to be Ron Meyer. I need a podcast studio because we have this vision. And he's like, that's it. I'll get behind it. And God took two women. At that point, I was a children's ministry director on staff at our church, who were willing to say yes to something. Okay, it's more fun if we do it together. And out of that, we helped Larry start his podcast. Two women who are not techie in their 40s. So sometimes we look at people and we disqualify them, thinking that they might not have what it takes, instead of looking at them and saying, who is the willing person who is responsive, who might do this? In order to be a team leader, you have to overcome the fear of asking others for help. It's a big thing. I talk to people all the time, and I invite them all the time. Actually, I'm not even leading my teams anymore, and I'm still recruiting for teams. Because I feel like my job is a bridge builder. I'm inviting people to belong. I'm inviting people to be part of something that's bigger than me and it's bigger than them. I'm inviting people into community. And I'm not like inviting all these new people to lead the team right away. But it's like you begin to trust them and you say, okay, come on, this is the expectations. If you struggle with expectations, write them down on paper. This is the parameters. If you have a problem, this is the person that you go to. I'm constantly asking. You have to address as a leader, it's easier to do it myself. You have to address that. And for me as a mom, as someone who volunteers a lot, sometimes my lack of diligence and just sitting for an hour and saying, okay, God, I'm going to sit for an hour over this event, over this need, and I'm just going to take an hour to listen to you. It takes intentionality to lead teams well. They don't happen by accident. It takes intentionality to build your event. Some of you are building mission teams. It takes intentionality. In that intentionality, you're writing down the vision. You're honing it. You're rehearsing it. You're getting better at finding the frameworks. I like to run it by a few people. Hey, can I talk to you about our vision for this and get your input? Because in running it by someone, I'm practicing and seeing what God pulls out of me. I've taken some time to wait and pray on it. And then seeing if God drops a spark that's going to light a fire in that person. You have to address perfectionism. It will be better, more perfect, done right if I just do it by myself. Yeah, it is messy. Guys, come on in. You can sit up here. You're so welcome. It is messy when you have a team. They don't always execute on the vision the way you wanted them to. Sometimes you have people and you think they understood you and they take it a whole different way. You have to be secure in your leadership to either say, hey, is this a situation when I need to let that person influence me? Okay, listen, leadership is not always about telling everybody exactly how it should be done. Wise leaders are influenced by their teams. Okay, there's times these guys will tell me something and I'm like, oh, I need to listen to this. And then there's times I tell them, I actually need it to be done this way. I really want you to hear me. And that back and forth builds trust because people feel heard. And sometimes people blow your mind and they make it better than even you thought it could be or that you had dreamed up. But it is a little messy. But you have to get over that perfectionism piece that it has to be done just perfectly in order to see growth come. Listen, my kids are growing. My house is a mess all the time. But are they growing and maturing and learning? Yes, they are. And people finding their way is going to look messy. So my next point was allow people to influence your vision. Allow them to give you feedback. Allow them to speak into it. When they speak into it, they're taking actually ownership of the process. Hey, babe, how are you? My favorite cheerleader in the back. Okay, Merle loves to say it this way. He said, what are the expectations you have for this department or this event? For lead pastors, it's really important that you take those expectations and sometimes just chronicle it for a month. What is really bothering me? Just sit on it and just start writing out, okay, is it a spirit of hospitality that's missing? You know, what is it that's actually missing? And then ask the Lord, is this something for now? Is this something that's low fruit we can easily adjust? Or is this something I need to pray for the right team member? You should never start a new department until you have the team leader in place because you're just giving yourself more work. All right, finding the right people. Number one, you need people with administrative gifts. Listen, it is a gift from God. All right, I will say right away, I would not be podcasting if I didn't have Lisa. She helps keep me in the schedule. She helps keep us, what was it that we decided we were going to talk about? I'm not trying to be her. I need her gift. Okay, Hannah, she got me. She grew up with dyslexic brothers. She would say, oh, Sheree got the date wrong. She didn't even correct me. She's like, I got you. I know what date you meant. So your team people that God brings around you are going to bring gifts that you don't have and that you need. And be okay with that, to honor what God gives that you're going to need. These administrative gifts thrive with checklists. There's people who really, they don't want your checklist. Okay? And we'll get to those people in a minute. They don't like a checklist. They feel like you're micromanaging them. Okay, you need to know the type of people that you have around you and where they fit best. Then there's the type of people that feel so secure if you would give them a checklist. So ask the person. You know, some people want to have a say in fixing the problem. They actually don't want you to fix it. They love it when you give them a problem and they can fix it. So find the right type of gift. And celebrate people who take ownership. What you celebrate is what you get more of. And I am not the lead pastor at our church. So I, many times as a peer or as a staff associate pastor, am celebrating things that make a big difference in departments that I influence. And my voice matters. So no matter what type of team you're leading, if you see something that you love and you want more of, you start your meeting with, what was a win? How can we encourage one another? What did you see in the last 2 weeks that was a win that someone did well? And you lead by calling out what they did well. All right, the next type of person you need is initiators. I'm an initiator. Some of these ladies are initiators. Initiators, you want to look for them because they are incredible. They are your pioneers. They love getting things off the ground and running. They love sharing the vision. They get people hyped up. And they get really worn out about 75%. 75% done is like done, and they're out of steam. Okay? So there's a great team profile for this. your initiators are kind of like they're getting it going and then they want to hand it off to a developer or a developer stable. And if you want to know more about that assessment, you can get that from the Dove School. But your initiators break ground for you. They typically dislike doing something for more than 2 years in a row. All right, then there's something I called operators. This is just like Shri Shang terms. There's not really official terms, but operators move the vision out of theory and into action. I don't know what it's like where you're from, but where I'm from, I have a husband who has a lot of vision and a lot of ideas and what's possible. And my gift set is to see the journey from what's possible into action, right? Operators are the type of people that you can trust to see a vision, and their sweet spot is bringing it alive. And they may or not be your recruiters. They want to know what's the vision and where's the boundaries. And what authority do I have? And if you give those people vision, boundaries, access to you, what authority do you have? They will move mountains. The most frustrating thing for these people is if you're not clear with your vision and you change your mind. You don't have boundaries or know how to articulate your boundaries, or you change them and you make them check in with you for every decision. So I was just speaking with an operator in the last month who was so frustrated, an extremely competent operator in the church world, who was saying my vision carrier forgets he delegated things to me, or like changes the plan at the last minute, or like doesn't fully release what he has asked me to do. That fries these amazing people out because they feel like you're wasting their time. So you want to keep your best people, and you want to know what does it take for you to thrive. So treat your operators well, those who make things happen, the boots on the ground kind of people. All right, I'm going to go a little faster here because I want to get to a few things. One of those things your operators need is they need access to you as the visionary. So if you're carrying the vision for your mission team, if you're carrying the vision for your department or your event, they don't need a lot of high touch from you, but they need enough to feel like they're in alignment. Does that make sense? They're power players. They can move things. And they don't want to butt you, but they want to be in alignment with you. And so those are people you just want to meet with like once a month, touch base with after church, okay, to make them succeed. I'm going to jump through. There's also like a recruiter and a galvanizer. We can talk about that later. Things that cause problems. The Moses syndrome. Hannah, can you look up Moses? I think it's Exodus 18. It's when Jethro came and he said to Moses, actually, I'll just paraphrase it. He said, hey, you're coming and you're meeting with these people all day and all night. And I guarantee you, most pastors feel like they're meeting with people all day and all night, and they don't have anything more to give. Jethro said, you can't do this anymore. It is not sustainable. Take what's on you and give it to people who can judge over groups of people. I think this is something they never gave us a class for in Bible school because we thought we would be preaching and teaching, right? Not being managers of teams and managers of people. We didn't get a class on this. But my encouragement for you is you have to start to admit that you need a team and no one is called to do it alone. The next one is the test of humility. 1 Corinthians chapter 12 says, can the eye say to the hand, I don't need you? And if you're taking notes, you can read that, but read it in the context of a team. 1 Corinthians 12, 21 through 27, the test of humility, saying, I don't have everything we need to make this vision come to pass. And I need you and what God has put in you to be successful. And be okay to say that. The test of timing, praying and fasting and waiting on the Lord to bring the team lead. Don't quit or walk in a spirit of abandonment in that season. Okay? It will take apostolic tenacity, commitment, faithfulness to see that vision come to pass. The test of security in our leadership. This is the example of David. David had these amazing mighty men. Some who were even stronger and did more amazing exploits than he did. There will be people on your team who have better gifts than you have. And the test of humility and security in our leadership is saying, I see that strength in you, and I want to invite you to bring it to the table. David was still the leader. There was no confusion in that. But allowing that person's gifts to shine. Test of success, celebrating the wins on the team. As a leader, you can create the space, the resources, the collaboration, and the financing. And your vision will have gone through so many iterations that now the team visionary thinks that it was their idea. And they put so much ownership into it that everybody's like, wow, look at what you've done. And they're like, yeah, I did it. This happens to me over and over and over again. But the thing is, that is the moment when you can sit back and say, wow, God, you did it. Because you did that part, but that person put legs to it, so much so that they own that vision and they think it was their idea. That is success. But we have to pass the test of success and humility to celebrate that, because you get more of what you celebrate. Okay, as a leader, you get more of what you celebrate. Okay, guys, this is something that you have to watch out for. Dumping versus delegating and coaching. How many of you have been so overwhelmed and someone was like, oh, I see you're overwhelmed. Can I help you? And you dump a whole department on them. Blah. Yeah, just take it. Please do whatever you want. Okay, that's not good leadership. That's dumping. Okay? Delegating says, I've cared enough to pray about this. I'm going to give you some words. I saw you doing X, Y, and Z. We really need that here. You would make a difference. Would I have permission to speak into your life? I'm considering a team lead in this area, and I think you might be a great fit and have what it takes. But I need to be able to speak into your life about a few things from time to time. If that's something you're interested in, would you be open to that? You lead with that because right there you have an opportunity to go back to say, hey, remember when we had that conversation where I asked to speak into your life, would you be interested in this? Do you remember that? I need to talk to you about how you're not getting here when I say I need you to get here. It's really important for the person who does this role to be here at a certain time. And I care about you and your success here. And I want you to hit the mark with what you said you would carry for this ministry to be what it's called to be. Those kinds of coaching communication skills gives people an opportunity not to be punished when they make mistakes, but to have an opportunity to redirect and to thrive. Build with intentionality. It's so important that we value the work our teams do, because I could not do what they do. I need them. And if you value people, they will feel the difference. They will not feel used. They will feel valued. And there's a difference. Okay, what you should look for. People you like working with. Okay, I've been there and worked with people that give me a hard time and complain. Listen, not everybody who comes to you should be on your team. Okay? Work with people that you like working with. Okay? Work with people who give you permission to coach and speak into their life. Be willing to say, I see this in your life. Call them out, especially female leaders, especially women need someone who says, I saw what you did when you were coaching that girl over there. That made a difference in their life. I think there was more for you in that. I want to ask you to lean into this area of women's ministry like this. Okay, especially your female leaders, they need to be told that you saw it and that they can do it and they have permission to do it. And that you think they can be successful and they don't have to be embarrassed to do it alone. Okay, you might know. I mean, some of us ladies, most of us ladies are Enneagram 8s. If you tell us that, we'll be like, we know. So know your audience. But a lot of women who have great talents and gifts inside of them need someone to call it out of them for them to step up. Okay? Many people have never seen themselves leading, but they have great talent and ability in them. All right, best practices for your teams. Write your expectations on paper. Go over it with your team leads and with your team. Meet with them regularly. Have an evaluation. What do we celebrate? What went well? What were some things we can tweak that we could do better? Coach and develop the gifting in the person, and always be recruiting and looking for the gifts God has given them. set them up for success and give them the vision so that they can share it with others who can run with it. All right, I'm going to give you some resources, then we're going to do a Q&A. I love the book, The God Ask by Steve Shadrach. It's a way of building lasting relationships through recruiting volunteers. It's built in a missional context. It really addresses that kind of independence where I just want to do it myself and do it all myself. It's an interesting book. I love what it says about relationship building and serving. The God Ask by Steve Shadrach. So many times we think we're asking people to help us. No, we're not actually asking people to help us. We're asking people to serve the Lord. And we shouldn't be afraid of that because most people are waiting for an invitation. There's only a few, like a small percentage of people who feel like they're leaders. Most of the people sitting in your congregation will say they're a follower. And a follower just needs invited. If you are a senior leader in your church, one of the most significant things that you can do for a department, for example, children's ministry, is by recruiting for them with your voice. It makes a difference. It makes a big difference. Okay, can you guys come up for my Q&A? Steve Backlund has a book, Culture of Empowerment. For you to get into a place of empowerment, listen, I thought I was a very empowered person. I just went through Steve Backlund's book with my small group, and I realized all the places that I was giving myself excuses to not level up to the next level of my leadership. And so that's another resource for you. I would also really encourage you to use some sort of organizational tool, such as Planning Center, Slack, there's ones available. That really helps bring your teams together. There's practical tools. Okay, guys, one on either side, and we're going to do a Q&A. So I know some of you are leading specific things. Anybody have a question? Go for it. Or you can sit there and I'll just give it to you. That was a lot, sorry. I was running at the speed of light. Yeah. Alex, can you come up? Because they were going to want to hear the question on the recording. I'm sorry. I know this is awkward. Or, yeah.
So my question would be, when you have like people coming into the church, obviously, and every family, every person is different, I think you mentioned that it doesn't have to take long before you get them plugged in because they're coming ready. Like, how do you guys process that of who you pull in as fast as you pull in or who do you wait with? Like, what are some of the indicators?
Okay. Hannah, I'll give this one to you in a minute. There are certain departments you can't serve in our church until you've been in a small group and you have, for example, with children, there's certain ones that we have a longer waiting period. Hannah leads Starting Ground at our church, which is a place where we invite, because we're small group based church, so we invite people right away into Starting Ground, which is a small group for those who are new to our church, so that they know like what our vision is, our theology. You know, you don't want people being like, oh my word, this church believes in the baptism of the Holy Spirit. I didn't know, and they're already serving on the worship team, you know, so you want to get those things out of the way. But out of that, so one of our best recruiters is these two ladies, so you can talk about how you sign them up and find out how they fit.
Yeah, so when new families come into our church, we have a connections team that Sheree talked about earlier that is like our welcome center, but it's so much more than that. They're standing in the lobby, mingling, getting to know people so they know who's coming in and when it's their first or second time there or when they've been there a lot. And then we run our Starting Ground classes. It's like once a quarter. It's like every 3 months normally. And yeah, I'm going to explain. So Starting Ground, we don't do traditional church membership. So when you do a traditional church membership, you do membership classes and then you sign a piece of paper at the end. We do it a little bit different. We want to get to know you. So myself and my husband, Matt, we lead Starting Ground with another small team. Lisa's on that team now. And it's basically the culture carriers in our church that carry the heart of our church and want other people to understand the heart and culture of our church. So you come and you sit with us for 3 weeks, 4 weeks. 3 weeks we talk about the church. It's once a week for 3 weeks. And then on the fourth week, we have dinner with other church leaders. So when they come in, we first start off telling them our vision for our church and our values, Dove values. What is Dove USA? What is Dove International? What does our church stand for? Here's our leadership. And then if everyone stays, which normally they do, then we ask them, where do you see yourself in the church? And who would you like us to invite to our dinner next week? And then we invite Jen if they want to be on the worship team, or if they're like, I really just want to get to know your lead elder, then we'll invite Merlin Shree. Or sometimes people just ask, can I get to know your eldership team? And we've already invited the entire eldership team to dinner. And then from there, we just work to incorporate them into ministries, and we just become a hinge point for people. So like, well, you know what? I think you would fit in really good with the children's ministry. Let me introduce you to Lisa. She could probably get you involved. Or prayer ministry. Yeah, you have a gifting in prayer, you know. And some of those things, we want to see them there, like Sheree said, a little bit longer. But that is starting ground, and Connection Center is a great hinge point to get people connected all throughout your church. Is that good? Yeah.
Merle, did you have any thoughts on that? Yeah. It's good. Oh, I'm drafting you. Oh, okay. Any other questions? Yeah, you wanna?
I'm good.
Okay, I have to repeat it. That's okay. That's good. Okay, so he's asking in their context, how can they empower people better who've come on board to actually take ownership of what they're doing. Does anyone have something that they're excited to jump in here? Otherwise, I can kick us off. So what you celebrate is what you get more of. So a lot of times, we just have a process of one or two people doing all the work, and we don't actually celebrate what we have done together. So we just on to the next thing. So when we have our staff meeting and we're pulling everybody together, we're like, I saw that you went and picked up so-and-so. I saw that you caught that drop ball. Thank you. That's incredible. And each one of us will start to call out what we saw somebody did to make us all look better. Sometimes it's not even their job description, because we're intentionally moving the needle that what gets attention here is what we celebrate from the stage, from every place of platform. Then number two, my question is for you. A lot of people make this mistake and they think it's delegating. Tell me what I should do and I will do it. Okay? But delegating is saying, would you take this responsibility? I'm really clear with it. I'm here if you need me. I'm going to speak into your life. Here's your budget. Here's what I'm expecting from you. And then you leave them with it. It's their voice at the microphone. It's their voice leading the meeting. It's their voice managing their finances for that department. When we do our department budgets, we have, because you never know, you have this faith budget, right? Like, God will bring in all this money, and then you have like the actual amount, right? So we have a method and we have a system. But for our team leads, they have their own budget. The youth doesn't come and check, can I spend $50 on ice cream? No, this is your budget. As it comes in, we fill it up. What are you going to do with that? And it shifts ownership when it's not like the older generation or someone else, the pastor always coming in. Sometimes Merle's had to not be present. It's painful. Sometimes growth is painful, where he will be strategically absent. A strategic vacuum, and letting them be a little messy. A little messy, because the voice of the next generation is going to sound different than our generation. And the way they do it is going to look different than the way we would do it.
So I think too, like when you're dealing with volunteers and you see them that they've done something that you're like, yes, like it may not be a lot. Like I had a volunteer that I know she was like intentionally going after, like, you know, because with Sunday school, like, you know, telling me like, oh, I really want to go after this lesson, right? So when I emailed her back, she was asking me something. I said, thank you so much for putting the extra time to go after this lesson, because I knew she was really going after something that, like, you know, and recognizing and pulling it out. And her response was, oh, thank you so much. But those little things that you recognize that they're putting something into, when you recognize that and thank them, then again, that's what's valued, and you'll have them go after that. And there is something too, I agree. When you create the vacuum, like, you are going to have to clean up this mess. Like, you have to take ownership of this. And you, as the head person, sometimes have to be like, I can't micromanage this. Like, you know, if I put this on you, be like, hey, this is your responsibility. There is an aspect, I may check in with you. Do you need anything? If you say no, then, you know, and there's that learning curve. But it also requires a lot of self-control on your end.
Yeah, when we started to make this shift that you're talking about in our church in Cape Town, it was hard. Merle made it in worship because he would always end up leading worship. And then he'd be, you know, preaching the sermon. And he got to a point where he said, I need to leave a vacuum where it becomes so uncomfortable that people actually realize there is a need here. Because it's so easy for Pastor Merle to do it. And we put up with the most horrendous worship for months. I wanted to cry. I begged him, please stop. I can't take it anymore. But guess what? Out of that, we birthed a whole new generation of worshipers who carry the anointing. Okay, he's saying that he created a strategic vacuum and it's been several months and he hasn't gotten a lot of response in that. And when you say management team, what do they handle at your church? Okay. Yeah. And is there a team leader in charge? Okay. So I think that might be the issue, is you have to decide if you're still going to be the team leader or if you have to give that whole thing to someone else. Or if that department has to go through a death in order to be reborn. So when we came to our church, can I say this? When we came to our church... Oh, well. When we came to our church, we were really struggling in the area of small group leadership. And so what happened is this was going back to prayer and intercession. We prayed and interceded at the eldership team level and asked the Lord. And at one point, we asked new people to lead it for a period of time. And now we're finally, by the grace of God, through the death cycle, and back into the re-energizing cycle. We just had our last small group thing bring 80% of our church into small groups. Okay, but what it might take is you giving that leadership to someone else or saying, okay, it's ended until God brings a new visionary. And that's a painful process as a leader because you shouldn't do any team unless you have the person who's willing to lead it, called by God to lead it. And it's painful when things have to die. But the Bible also says if it's of him, it will go into the ground and it will bring forth fruit again. And you just have to trust the Lord. Did you want to?
I think, like, it also, so in a scenario that you described where you said, you know, for 3 months, you know, not one word has been in the chat. Nobody's stepping up, right? So you tried the whole strategic vacuum thing. Before you do that, you really have to put time and intentionality into building that culture, casting the vision, really making sure that you are clear in what the vision is so that people actually can catch it and run with it. And then this is the hard part, asking people why they are demotivated. Because that's real-time feedback. Like, we have to create a culture of feedback where feedback is okay. If we are in a passive aggressive culture, the first time you do that, you're going to get like feedback from 10 years ago. You know, you're like, wow, I'm so sorry you walked through that with that other leader, you know, or whatever. But as you come up to current time stamp, what is real feedback and having a way that people can voice what is actually demotivating them to serve. And that takes like brutal honesty. That's actually why we start some of our staff meetings or all of our staff meetings. Did you cover this already? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. With wins and celebration, because we're also going to be brutal and honest with what didn't go well. Not never, never.
It's just honest. This is what happened. There's no sugarcoating it.
Right. It's never personal. It's just the fact that a ball dropped. All right, so how do we not, we're competing against ourselves, we're not competing against anybody else. So how do we get better the next time we do this? So what do we need to implement to have this not happen again? So then you have a trajectory of growing.
All right, any other questions? Yes, do you want to? Wow, praise God. We're over time, so I'm gonna answer your question, but I'm gonna end our recording time just because we're over time. I think. So there's always not responsible for the non-responders. We're responsive to go out when we sow the seed. We're looking for people who are open, they are hungry, and they are sharing. And a lot of times they don't look like the person who we would like to fill this role. Honestly, they might look like the 14-year-old. They might look like the single mom. They might look like the already too busy person. So I always look to work with people who are willing, not with people who have excuses, because there's a group of people that are called to work with you and co-labor with you. And so we love those people, and we're there to serve them just like we would serve anyone who comes into our church. But when we're talking about volunteers, you want to work with people who are like, I would love to do this with you. And you want to look for people who have your heart. There's people who are called to walk with you, some for a season, not always long, but it's your job to pray into that and find those people. And sometimes it's the work and the spark of the Holy Spirit that brings that shift. A lot of times we're looking for people to do what we say. How do I say this nicely? What I love about Larry and Laverne, when they invited Merle and I to do this role, they ask us what's on our heart. They don't monologue us with all the things that they want us to do in the 10-year history of how they got to it. They just said, we have a need. Are you interested? You know, these are our values. What do you see? And that person brings fresh life and vision. And you have to allow it to bring change. The next generation, especially if you're dealing with like the younger ones, they're going to see it differently. And we have to be flexible to allow them to do it differently and bring their peace. I don't know. That's just what I see. It's a hard word, but I feel like it's a powerful word. And yeah.
There's one thing, kind of the vacuum that you're talking about, is we allow people in our church to see the need. So if we don't have a teacher for the fourth grade class, well, then we'll let it go a week or two. And your fourth grader can sit next to you. And you can see the need for the fourth grade teacher. And you hear from your kids, Mom, I want to go to class. Dad, I want to go to class. And eventually someone steps up because they see the need in your church. Sometimes it's okay. The vacuum also means like letting your people see the need that is in the church. Is that okay?
Did you want to share anything? Any other questions? I think we're over time. Is our next speaker here? All right. Thank you, guys.